Hi.
I'm there.
Okay. So we left off last time. We were up to Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Ches. And what had happened until now, we've been reading for the last almost Perek and a half about the rebellion of Yehu. Yehu, who had assassinated both the king of the northern kingdom and the king of Malchus Yehuda. And this was done with authority given to him by a Navi. The mission had originally been given to Eliyahu. Eliyahu had passed it on to Elisha, and Elisha had appointed an unknown Navi that the Mepharshim tell us was Yonah to go ahead and anoint Yehu and to give him the charge of assassinating the king and ridding Klal Yisrael of the household of Ahav. But the dynasty of Ahav that was really founded by Ahav's father, Omri, had been reigning for four generations. It was Omri, Ahav, and two of Ahav's sons. So there were four kings from the household of Omri, and this Yehu was charged with putting them to death and eradicating the entire household. What he goes further is he seems to take his mission not just for the household of Ahav, but the Malbim explains as a note of introduction that when this Navi, who we say was Yonah, came to anoint him as king, so the Pasuk said that you're going to be a king over the people of Hashem, over Israel. So it mentioned both, referred to the Jewish people living in the north, both as the people of Hashem and the people of Israel. So the Malbim explains that the people of Hashem, that you can only be the people of Hashem if you're going to serve Hashem. And right now, what was seemingly the biggest issue for the people in terms of anti the movement of Hashem was the worship of Baal. Baal was a certain type of Avodah Zarah that had been brought to Eretz Yisrael specifically by Izebel, the wife of Ahav. And it's now that Yehu has kind of gotten rid of all the other members of the household of Ahav, he turns his attention to more kind of a religious mission. And what's actually fascinating is that we're going to see, till now, we've been looking at Yehu, and he's probably, like we've said, a complex figure in Tanakh. But we've seen this very, very ferocious side of Yehu, and it's almost like he's willing to take any amount of casualties to fulfill the mission. And there are a number of hints in the Psukim here of sensitivity that is the exact opposite, of being sensitive to life and being sensitive to innocent life. So it's going to be a balance, and that all that does for us, you know, sitting here reading together, it makes him more complex, and that's something for us to be thinking about. So we're going to pick up Pasuk Yud Ches. Vayikvots Yehu es kol ha'am. Yehu gathered all of the people. Vayomer aleihem, and he said to them, Achav avad es habal ma'at. Achav only worshipped the Avodah Zarah of Baal a little bit. Yehu, talking about himself in third person, Yehu yavdenu harbe. Yehu will serve Baal a lot. Harbe. So,
that's not his mission.
Yehu tells the people, and honestly, the best way to read these psukim is to pretend like you have no knowledge of what comes next.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Yehu gathered the people, and he starts telling them that Ahav only worshipped the Baal a little bit, and Yehu will worship a lot. Which even has a little bit of the sound that you want to know why Ahav didn't last. Because he wasn't from enough. He didn't worship Baal enough.
I know.
Had he worshipped Baal enough, then his dynasty would still be in rule. I am going to worship Baal Harbe. Right? It's the contrast between Ma'at and Harbe. And therefore, you should be thinking something of me. Pasuk Yotes. The Ata and now. Kol Nevi'e HaBaal. All of the prophets of the Baal. Kol Ovdav. All of Baal's servants. V'chol kohanav, and all of Baal's priests, kiru elai, should gather unto me, ish al yipaked. No man should be missing. The word paked usually means to count, right? The second name that we have for Sefer Bamidbar is the Book of Numbers. It's not a secular name, as we've mentioned many times. It's a name that Chazal has. Sefer Bamidbar is called Sefer Pekidim, the Book of Counting. Because in the beginning of Sefer, Klal Yisrael is counted. At the end of the Sefer, Klal Yisrael is counted. When Chazal took a look at the five books of the Torah, the fact that one book has the opening and closing stories be counting, so the Chazal decided to call it the Book of Sefer Pekidim, and somehow the secular attached themselves to call it Numbers as opposed to calling it, you know, in the desert. But so Pakade usually means to count, to take an accounting. So Al Yipakade is don't not be counted. It's don't let yourself not be counted by not being there. Why? He zevach gadol li labal. I'm going to be making a great zevach, a great sacrifice, reference to animal sacrifices, as we'll see, for Baal. Kol asher yipakeid lo yichya. Whoever is not counted, whoever is going to be absent, lo yichya, is not going to live. You got to be there. This is going to be the definitional moment, the shift, where we're going to be making a monumental worship of Baal, and you have to be there. End the message of Yehu. Begin the narrator speaking to us. V'Yehu asa b'okpa. Yehu was acting b'okpa in a cunning manner. L'man ha'avid es ovdei ha'baal. In order to destroy the servants of Baal.
This one, he called himself Yehu in the third person.
It's not me. It's, I don't know how to explain it. So the truth is that Chazal are critical of Yehu, because while he's going to be going ahead and making a trap, and we're going to see, not going to come to a shock, he's going to be successful, mm-hmm. and he's going to kill a lot more people who are deserving of punishment. The fact that he kind of put on the face of Avodah Zarah to say that he's going to be worshiping, Chazal is critical of, and they claim that some of the punishment that comes towards the house of Yehu, which I'll reference last time when we took a look at the first chapter in Sefer Hosea, they ascribe some of the punishment that comes to Yehu's dynasty because of this decision. That even, you know, it's fascinating because here the word for cunning or trickery is what? Akba, right? What does that sound like? We just had a lot in our parshios. Akev and Yaakov, right? That Yaakov, right? Vayaakveni, and he tricked me, right? Esav says he tricked me two times, right? He tricked me with the Bechora, and he tricked me with getting the brachos. So that's where the language, it's interesting, one of the other ways the Targum translates it is Bechuchma. That Chachma, but it's not just Chachma, it's trickery. Now, it happens to be that this is Yehu seems to possess this ability, because how did he go ahead and kill those the 70 sons of Achav? He did not get his hands dirty at all. He went ahead and figured out a way to kind of trap all the other caretakers and governors that they'll do the murder, and all of a sudden, he's not even held responsible fully. Everyone has their hands dirty. That he had a good mind, and he had a mind that was very good at tricking people.
He makes it out that everybody should come. So maybe they didn't believe somebody would.
So we'll kind of explain how he gets around innocent lives. But the interesting thing here is that, you know, Yaakov Avinu is not usually we assume that what Yaakov Avinu did when he put on the clothing of Esav and went to take the brachas, he was listening to his mother Kibbut Aim, and he was doing what was supposed to be done. So he's not necessarily criticized for that, but the difference couldn't be right. All he did was put on the clothing of Esav. He disguised himself as something. You would say just wearing the clothing of Esav is not an isser. Here, what Yehu is doing, and we're going to see, he doesn't just send the invitation and have everyone show up, and then they get surprise attacked. He goes through with some of the worship of the Avodah Zarah, and again, all for the right intentions, but it's Chazal are rather critical And so we need to keep that. We need to keep that in mind. But again, this last phrase of the pasuk, nobody knew that. This is kind of like the narrator, meaning Yirmiyahu, who's writing the sefer a couple of hundred years after this point, is saying that Yehu was acting with trickery, and he had his intentions the whole time was to destroy the Ovdei HaBaal, the worshippers of Baal. There, when he says, right, when he says that there's going to be a Zevach, he says we're going to have this great Zevach Gadol, so he's trying to create an event. He's trying to create such an event that you know, nowadays in our society, I think we've become very event-driven. If you can create the greatest event, so that's how you're going to get people to come, right? Your tzedakah organizations work around the clock trying to figure out, how do we create this event? And if we create the event, then people are going to come, right? Our cause is not enough. We have to have an event. Yeah. Got to have a big ad in the paper. Very colorful. It's got to be a big event. So technically, that Yehu was trying to create this Zevach Gadol, Rashi explains. He was trying to create an event that would draw the people in. The Kli Yakar, I don't know how the Art Scroll knows the Kli Yakar's commentary. I guess he brings it down in Chumash somewhere and they knew it. The Kli Yakar explains that when he says Zevach Gadol, so it's kind of like there's a hidden meaning. Because the word Zevach means a carbon, but it could also be referring to the slaughtering of the carbon. So Zevach Gadol, you could understand it as the great slaughter. Now what's the great slaughter? So he was inviting them to the great slaughter, what they thought was going to be sacrificing animals for the sake of the Baal. What in the end result is what his intentions were for the great slaughter to be the punishment of the slaughter of these humans who were servants to Baal. And so there might be some meaning in there. Pasachaf. Vayomer Yehu. So Yehu now says, presumably to his servants, to his messengers, Kadshu Atzara. You should set an Atzara. An Atzara is an assembly, a gathering. The word Otzer sometimes means to gather. Labal, for the Baal. Vayikru. And so they declared it. They set a certain day, a certain time, and right, the Metzidus Tzion says, his minu yom, he selected a day, this was going to be the day, and then he got the word out that this is the day, whatever, we're not necessarily told, I don't believe we're ever told what day it was, what day of the week, what time of the year, what was the exact date that this took place. We could assume, it sounds like it's happening very quickly after he became king. So when you sit, if you were sitting there with a, not just the calendar, but if you were trying to figure, we're going to see that he ends up ruling for 28 years as king. He ends up being Esrim Ushmona. He ends up being the king in Malchus Yisrael with the second longest reign. The only king who's longer than him is his great grandson, who. We'll have to see why. Unfortunately, they chose to give him the name Yeravam, which was not hasn't been a good name, and doesn't do him well. Although he is king for 41 years, and he has the record as being the longest reigning king in Malchus Yisrael in the Northern Kingdom. It seems to be taking place during the first year, first months, weeks, if not, of Yehu's ascension to the throne. So they set this day and Pasachav Aleph, Vayishlach Yehu b'chol Yisrael. So Yehu sends out messengers to all of Yisrael, meaning the northern kingdom. Vayavo kol ovdei Baal, and all of the worshippers of Baal arrive. V'lo nishar ish asher lova. And there's no one missing. Whether that means that was, whether it's an exact phrase or an exaggeration, we're not 100% sure. We're going to see what he accomplishes in terms of eradicating the worship of Baal seems to be carte blanche, seems to be across the board. So the pasuk might actually be literal, that, and you could play the miracle card, that it actually happened. Now, v'lo nishar ish asher lova, the rational explanation of why it might have happened is, just put yourself in the shoes of a worshiper of Baal. Mm-hmm. There's a new king on the scene. Let's just say you live in Haifa, and there's a new king on the scene. In his first couple of days as being in the public sphere, he's assassinated the king of the north, the king of the south, anyone who's related seemingly almost to either king that he can get his hands on, he's assassinated. The wife, the mother of the king of the north, Izebel, it seems like this is not someone that you want to mess with. And he put out an invitation, and part of the invitation, instead of saying like black tie only, it was basically show up, and if you don't show up, lo yichya. If you don't show up, you're not going to live. So the choice to stay home in Haifa is not really such a choice. So the pasuk might actually be real when it says v'lo nishar ish asher lo va, meaning first and, you could put an and in parentheses, he's putting up the front that he's actually worshiping the Baal. And there's nothing, you know, perhaps they're all gullible. But even if they have a thought in their mind that maybe it's a trap, which we have no indication that they do, it's kind of like, remember the lepers? The lepers who couldn't go into the city, and they decided to go see if the enemy, they basically said, listen, if we go, we're not allowed in the city. If we stay here, we're going to die. We might as well go see the enemy, because what do we got to lose? So these people who are staying in their homes, perhaps, or at least when they got the invitation, they could be thinking to themselves, listen, we don't know what Yehu's going to do to us when we get there. But if we stay here, we're sitting ducks. So a pasuk might be quite literal. It says, "V'lo nishar ish asher lova." Vayavo beis ha-baal. They came to a certain temple of the Baal. I don't remember being told in the psukim about a specific temple, a specific house of worship that was for Baal, and whether there was more or less of them, I'm not sure. Meaning, is this the only temple of Baal? Were there others? It seems from the psukim afterwards that this is a central temple, and the fact that this temple of Baal is going to get destroyed, that is a monumental event. Vayimoli beis ha-baal, they filled up the temple, peh-la-peh. Peh-la-peh is a very strange phrase. The Mefarshim here don't really care that it's so strange. It's only used twice in all of Tanakh. The phrase peh la peh. I searched
mouth
it.
Mouth to mouth.
Right. Literally. So it doesn't mean the literal translation is mouth to mouth. The Metzudas David says no. We're talking about from one Pesach to the next Pesach, from one door to the other door. It was door to door packed, meaning it was packed. Now no one's bothered by Pelepe. The only other time that it's used is also in Melachim Beis. It's not used ever before Melachim Beis, and not used ever after Melachim Beis. I don't know, I was just intrigued by it, because usually to refer to Pelepe as
end to end,
it's not so common. Now, the only thing I could explain to you is that the other time that it's used, it's extremely negative. The other time that it's used is in reference to other forms of destruction. We'll see it actually. It's mentioned later in Parakhaf, Pasuk Tazayin. And so the fact that the second time has to do with destruction, so that maybe that's just some type of hint to us that here, this is the beginning of destruction. Other than that, you know, Rashi and the Radak kind of gloss over it, and they just take they accept the translation Pelepe.
Where else is it?
The only other time is in Parak Chaf of Melachim Beis. We'll get there. Chapter 20. Yeah. We're in Parak Yud.
It has the same meaning.
There, either Rashi or the Doc says it's Shar Lashar, because it's a reference to the city. So basically, from one end of the city to the other end of the city. Here we're talking about a structure. From one end of the structure to the other end of the structure.
The exact opposite, Pen of Pen. They were so crowded that
the people were that close.
They were so close, it was like Pen of Pen.
It's possible. Mm-hmm. It's possible that Pen of Pen is actually, it's talking about the people. That the people were so close that it was almost like their mouths were close to each other. Mm-hmm. Definitely possible. But again, that phrase is not used. You have to imagine there are other times in Tanakh where people are kind of squished together, and you would maybe have that phrase, which is not. So again, I don't know if there's more significance, less significance. I raise it as the issue, you can feel free to do some more research. There are some who pick up from this pasuk that, you know, how big could this temple have been? The fact that all of the Ovdei HaBaal fit into one structure, maybe there weren't that many Ovdei HaBaal at the time. That while their influence was great, and while Klal Yisrael was held responsible for allowing them to exist in their midst, maybe there's a hint in this pasuk that there were not so many of them. At the same time, we don't know the size of this structure. Meaning, just because there are different types of it says uses the word base, you know, you could create something that's very, very long and it's not so, it doesn't have the most elaborate structure, and you can end up fitting thousands of people in it. It's not, you know, it could be a, you know, kind of a makeshift type of temple. We'll see that there was stone involved. But we're not really, that insight, I don't think it has the strongest legs to stand on. It wasn't made by any of the Rishonim. Let's continue. Pasuk Chaf Beis. Vayomer la'asher ala mel tacha. Now Yehu said to those who were in charge of the wardrobe. The Metzudos Tzion says, Makom gnizas kriche mabushe kahane abal. The people who were in charge of the storehouse that had the clothing that the priests of Baal would wear. And Yehu says to the person, Hotze levush l'chol ovdei HaBaal. Take out a set of clothing, a uniform, for each of the ovdei HaBaal. Vayotze lehem hamalbush. And he took out for them these sets of clothing, which the Mefarshim pick up on, is that this is the first hint of sensitivity to the innocent. Because, again, when you create this event, so you could, hopefully, his goal is to get the people who are actually interested in worshiping Baal. But if the event is that great, and it seems that if it's that well advertised, if it can't miss, so even if you are, you know, you don't really worship the Baal, but, you know, or you're just curious, so you might show up. But that doesn't mean you'll put on an actual uniform. Meaning to put on, you know the concept of a frum yid putting on a cross. It's beyond. You couldn't even imagine doing such a thing. So some of the Mefarshim explain the Malbim and others. Well, the Malbim says something else. There's I'll get back another. Another one of the Mefarshim say, and then the door opens by itself. Just hold on 1 second.
Nope, somebody's here.
We got your invitation.
Oh, we
got
it.
Yes. No, I didn't. So the other commentator says that the reason why he wanted them to put on uniforms was because that's like, to do that, only the real ones will put on. And then he will know, he'll be able to tell, eventually he's going to be instructing guards about actually killing these people. And so it's going to be only the ones who are dressed as Ovdei HaBaal would be killed. The Malbim says that it was an insurance policy. The insurance policy was that he wanted to make sure that if one of these Ovdei HaBaal would escape from the temple, he would be wearing something that you would know he's escaping. So again, it happens to be that both of these Perushim, we just keep highlighting this Yehu. He was quite bright.
He was an army person.
He was an army person, and he seems to be quite. He's a couple of steps. He's a couple of steps ahead. So he goes ahead and in Pasuk Chaf Beis, he instructs them, they go ahead and they put on this malbush. But at the same time, you know, according to the first pshat that I mentioned, he wants only those who are guilty. Meaning this is highlighting a sensitivity that we didn't necessarily feel. We saw Yehu as trying to fulfill a mission of Hashem. Granted, it's a severe type of mission of eradicating the household of Achav, but it seems from his attitude, we felt like he was enjoying it too much. We felt like he was taking it too far, and maybe at one point in his life he ends up being, or his at one point in his monarchy's life, they're held accountable for taking it too far. But there's actually a hint the other way. There's a hint the other way. That no, he had it out for the Ovdei HaBaal, and if there was an innocent person there by chance, he didn't want that person to be caught in the crossfire. He wanted to be able to identify Ovdei HaBaal, not Ovdei HaBaal. So by asking them to put on the uniform, only a real Eved for Baal would go ahead and dress himself in that way. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Vayavo Yehu, v'yohonadav ben Rechav, beis HaBaal. Yehu and his friend, who you'll hopefully recall from last time when we learned, who had joined him on his chariot, and Yehu had said to Yehonadav, the son of Rechav, he said, you know, do you want to come and see how zealous I am for Hashem? And Yehonadav comes along. So they arrive at the Beis HaBaal. Vayomer lo'ovdei HaBaal. And now Yehu is talking to the servants of Baal. And he says to them, Chapsu uru'u, pen yesh po imachem me'avdei Hashem. Mm-hmm. Search out amongst yourselves, lest there be here someone who worships Hashem. We got to get rid of the Hashem. We got to kick them out. This is not for them. This is only for us committed worshippers of Baal. Ki im ovdei HaBaal levadam. This is private, right? And again, this has two aspects to this. On the one hand, he wants to try to remove anyone who's innocent. On the other hand, he's trying to convince the Ovdei HaBaal of how serious he is, right? He doesn't want any outsiders. He only wants those who are sincere, right? Remember what he said. He said, Achav only worshipped Baal a little bit. I'm going to worship Baal Harbei. You know how committed I am? I'm not even going to let someone who's wavering, someone who thinks that they still believe in Hashem a little bit, they got to be out. I want the pure Ovdei HaBaal. That's who I invited here, and that's who I want here. Pasuk of Dalet, Vayavo lasos zvachim va'olos. So they come and they start doing and offering zvachim va'olos. Zvachim, when it comes to halacha, zvachim usually refer to any type of carbon, but when you have phrase like zvachim va'olos, so olos is a carbon that's fully consumed by fire, mm-hmm. And a zavach refers, by halacha, refers to a carbon shlamim. Carbon shlamim has the word shalem, which means complete. Everybody's happy with a carbon shlamim. The mizbeach gets a piece, that's Hashem. The kohanim get a piece, and the Yisrael who brought the carbon also gets a piece for him and his family. So therefore, everybody's happy. It's interesting, and I don't necessarily remember this from other places, but I'm sure it is. It's interesting that both karbonos are mentioned in the context of Avodah Zarah. Meaning you would maybe think that when it comes to Avodah Zarah, either they would be, you know, kulo to their Avodah Zarah, that everything has to be offered to the Avodah Zarah, so the entire thing gets burnt by fire because it's all going to the idol. Or maybe you would think that they're all about self, that yeah, we're worshipping the Avodah Zarah, but everything's going to go to the owner. Everything's going to go to the one offering. It's interesting that both aspects are there by Avodah Zarah. And it perhaps even calls into question. There's a machlokas, a great machlokas rishonim. When you come to, we're Baruch Hashem back in Sefer Bereishis, so we're busy with talking about the avos and the imos and all these wonderful stories. But pretty soon we'll be back in Sefer Shemos, and we'll be back in Mitzrayim, and then we'll get out of Mitzrayim, and then comes the building of the Mishkan. And there's a great machlokas rishonim. How to understand the building of the Mishkan and the Avodas of Karbanos. And the Machlokas hinges on, was it L'chatchila or B'di'evid? Was the original intention of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when the people came out of Mitzrayim that there would be a Mishkan and there would be Karbanos as the central place of worship? Or was it only a response and a reaction to the Chet HaEgel? Was it only a response and reaction to the Chet HaEgel? See, according to those who say that the Chumash goes in order of chronological order, so when you read Parshas Yisro and Mishpatim, you get all the laws of the Torah. We have no mentioning yet of Chet HaEgel. Then you have Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh, which talk about the commandment to build a Mishkan and build the Kahuna, the Big Day Kahuna. Then comes Parshas Kisiso, which has the Chet Egel. So if you are bound by saying that the Torah always goes according to chronological order, you have to say that the commandment to build Mishkan was Lechatchila, was the ideal. Then they sinned with the golden calf, and so, you know, maybe it takes on some type of meaning. But there are those Rishonim who say you don't have to explain the Torah according to chronological order. Rashi's famous quote is Ein Muktam Umuchar B'Torah. It's not a chronological book. Why we're told things where we're told has there are specific reasons. And so you could understand Mishkan as being a reaction, that because Klal Yisrael sinned with Chet Egel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized that there was a certain koach in the world at that time. And in order to combat that strength, that evil strength, he needed to create some type of Mishkan, some type of thing that's kind of in between him and the people, where the people could come in Ohel Moed, a place of meeting, a place that you go to encounter Hashem, with the whole idea of all the Karbanos. And so the Karbanos, according to that approach, are a reaction to the Karbanos that maybe exist in the world at that time. And so maybe the fact that here you have an Avodah Zarah that both has ideas of Shlamim and Ola, well, you know, it could be that we incorporated that if you're understanding Mishkan and Karbanos as a reaction, so then we need to have both of those components. If you understand the other way, which again, this is a Machlokas Rishonim, so it's not here for us to pick sides and decide, but then obviously it's just, you would say it's a coincidence, you would say that, but that I found it fascinating that this, you would think by Avodah Zarah you'd pick one. But here he has both options. And again, he's trying to create this great event. So they have Zvachim and Olas, and they're bringing them. So it's this point that the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin, Chazal, is critical. Maybe he could have figured out a way to do it without actually worshiping, without actually sacrificing. Because again, anytime you sacrifice a korban, so here he's sacrificing it, or at least he's announcing that he's sacrificing it for the sake of Avodah Zarah. Even if, in the back of his head, he was thinking, you know, I'm really doing this for Hashem, he's somewhere near Shomron in Israel, he's somewhere in the north, bringing a karban in the north is aser. It's a violation. There's a Beis HaMikdash sitting in Yerushalayim. So it shouldn't have happened. It didn't need to go to this extent. And you might say, you know, if we want to continue with the path of Chazal of being critical, it seems that Yehu was pretty good and pretty tricky. Couldn't he have done it without the actual karban? Like, he's gotten everyone there. They're all wearing what they're supposed to be wearing. Isn't that enough? Couldn't he just stop it there? Why does he have to keep the ruse going a little more? So some want to say it's another level of being sensitive to the innocent. Because let's just say you were willing to put on the beged. You wouldn't be willing to take part in the avodah. You wouldn't be willing to take a knife and say, you know, Asher Kedishanu b'Mitzvosav Tzivanu L'shech Tabal. You know, you wouldn't be willing to actually worship it in public like that. So maybe that's why he wanted them to actually take part of the worship. So this way, it would only be those, you know, the real frumma, the real ones who really worship Baal, who are ready to actually take part in the avoda of Baal. Then he'll know. At the same time that they start the Karbanos process, the Yehu, some lo bachutz shmonim ish. Yehu had placed outside the temple a troop of 80 men, 80 guards. And apparently that was enough, in his opinion, to do their job. By Yomer, and he said to them, because remember, Yehu doesn't play games. Vayomer, he said to them, Ha'ish asher yimolit min ha'anashim, asher ani mevi al yedchem, nafsho tachas nafsho. You let one person out, you're taking his place. You let one person out of this temple, you let him escape, you're going to have to take his place. Meaning, you're going to be chayiv with your life. For every life that you let go, I'm going to take one of yours. Which is, that's pretty serious for the king, the commander-in-chief of the army, to say to this group. So their job clearly is to make sure that nobody escapes. Pasuk Chafei. Vayhi kechaloso la'asos ha'ola. It was when he was finishing the offering of the ola, the carbon that karban or karbanos that are fully consumed. By Yomer Yehu, Yehu said, L'ratzim v'lashalishim. Ratzim are those part of the army that run quickly. That they run before the chariots. The chariots are being drawn by horses. The ratzim, I guess the infantry that runs in front of them. V'ashalishim, shalishim are officers or captains. The Mitzvah Tzion says sarim. Asar is an officer. The Art Scroll translates as a captain. V'yelchu ad ir. Sorry. L'ratzim v'ashalishim. Bo hakum ish al yetzim. They were given the command to come to the Beis HaBaal and strike all of the men, all of those who were inside the temple, al yetze, not allowing anyone to go out. Vayakum lefichariv, he went ahead and struck them. He struck them with through the sword. Vayashlichu haratzim vashalishim, and they threw themselves. Vayelchu ad ir Beis HaBaal, and they advanced going up to the city of Beis HaBaal. The Mefarshim understand this language of that they were acting with such zrizus. The soldiers were acting so it was like they were throwing themselves. It was like they were fully engaged and fully attacking. Pasuk Avav, Vayotziu es matzvos Beis HaBaal vayisrfua. They removed some of the monuments, some of the stone structures that were involved, that were part of the Beis HaBaal, and they burned them. Now, stones usually don't burn, but it could be these. Usually a matzeva is made out of stone, but it could just be it's a language of destruction. We're going to see the extent. The next pasuk talks about what else they did, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe first you add some fire, because the next phrase, Pasuk of Zion, Va-Yitzu. Yitzu is that they smashed. Va-Yitzu as Matzvas HaBaal. Now they smashed the monuments of Baal. Va-Yitzu as Beis HaBaal. They now took part in smashing the entire temple of Baal. Va-Yismuhu Limotzaos Ad Hayom. And they placed it or designated this location as a public bathroom ad hayom until today. Ad hayom until today, that can only be added. That's added by the one who writes the sefer. It's put in by Yirmiyahu hundreds of years later. That they destroyed they didn't just want to destroy those who worship the Baal. They were nervous that if they only destroy those who worship the Baal, but they leave the temple, so someone else could come and fill up the temple again. So they wanted to destroy the temple of Baal to the extent that it would be gone. This word, l'machara os, so it's, Rashi says, lashon beis hakiseh, it means a bathroom. And in Yeshaya, the pasuk actually uses it in an extreme, where it talks not just because we've seen made mentioning of the concept of urinating on a location that's degrading it. This is actually talking about defecating. That it was treated as a total outhouse that had, you know, and that's it was considered to be totally disrespectful, and that's the language of the pasuk in Yeshaya using this word, the kriuk siv, using the way that it's written, lemacharos, and the extent to which they succeeded, pasuk hafches, that Yash made Yehu es habal miyisrael. Yehu succeeded in totally destroying, that Yash made Yehu es habal miyisrael. He eliminated Baal from Klal Yisrael, and we'll have to see. I mean, it sounds like from the pasuk that this problem doesn't creep up again. That he totally got rid of Baal from the northern kingdom, which sounds amazing. And at this point, if you don't read the next pasuk, if you don't take a look at the next pasuk yet, at this point, if you think about Yehu, you think about the entire northern kingdom until this point, starting from Yeravam, when in the first little first time, the first weeks of Yeravam being king, it seems to be that he's proper. He was chosen by Hashem. Shlomo HaMelech was punished for decisions that he made and choices that he made. And it had to be that two tribes were going to be in one place and 10 with the other. And they were supposed to be kingdoms side by side worshiping Hashem. Mm-hmm. Soon after that, the whole thing goes downhill with Yeravam. And every king since then has just gotten worse and worse and worse. It's like, we didn't think it could get worse. And then the pasuk says it got worse. And then who came along? Achav. And he really made things worse with his wife Izebel. And we spent so much time on that. And here his two children. Yehu eradicated the house of Achav following the Navi. He was anointed by the Navi. And now he got rid of the Baal. It seems like he's our best chance at leading a real tshuva movement and having the northern kingdom become a proper kingdom and be a side-by-side kingdom with Malchus Yehuda, two kings, both servants and shlichim of Hashem, and it could work, but it doesn't. Pasuk Chavtes. Rak. But Chatoe Yeravam ben Nevat Asher Hechti Es Yisrael Lo Sar Yehu Me'achareihem. The sins of Yeravam ben Nevat, the first king of the north, those sins that he caused the Jewish people to sin with, Losar, were not removed by Yehu. What are those sins? The Egle Hazav, the golden calves, Asher Beis El, Vasher Bedan. That was in the quote-unquote southern city of the northern kingdom known as Beit El. And the northern city, one of the most northern cities of the northern kingdom known as Dun. The city of Dun, which was probably in the land of Dun. And those calves, those golden calves that Yeravam had put there, he didn't remove. And to say that Yehu did not have the power to remove them, you can't say. This guy, this individual seems to be one of the most powerful men we've ever come in contact with. He doesn't seem to know how to take no for an answer, and he knows how to rule with power, and if he says he's going to do something, he does it. And so why doesn't he? So Rashi says the same. I believe he says the same idea. Rashi says the same problem with Yeravam. What was the problem with Yeravam? Yeravam was very short-sighted. And Yeravam said, listen, the people sided with me now, but in a couple of weeks, a couple of months, come Pesach, come Sukkot, they're going to go to Yerushalayim, and they're going to go to the Beis HaMikdash, like they're supposed to. And they're going to see the king of Malchus Yehuda, and they'll forget that Rechavam, the son of Shlomo, wanted to raise the taxes and didn't want to listen to their demands and wanted to deal very fiercely with them. They'll forget that, and they'll warm up to the king of Yehuda, and I'll be done. And so Yeravam said, I can't have them go to Yerushalayim. So what do you have to do? So he went ahead and created these Egle Azov with the right intentions. They're going to worship Hashem. They're just going to do it at these, right? We had mentioned at that time, he could have picked something else. Like, we don't really have the best history with golden calves. Right. But that's an old question. But so he was nervous. He was nervous that people would be inspired by the Beis David. So Rashi says the same comment here. Midaga shalot tashuv hamamlacha l'Beis David. He was nervous about the monarchy, unified monarchy, returning to Beis David. Kemoshen esyari Yeravam. Just as Yeravam was worried. But here it's with such a level of short-sightedness, because I don't remember if the pasuk said it clearly, but the Mefarshim bring down that in the promise to become king, when the Navi comes to Yehu and declares him king, so the Mefarshim bring down that he was promised Oh, it's maybe in the next pasuk. We're going to see that he's promised that he's going to have the fourth generation be king. He's going to be king. His son is going to be king. His grandson is going to be king. His great grandson is going to be king. We're actually going to see his great great grandson is king. It's only for a matter of 6 months, and he's the one who loses the monarchy. But to have four generations to be king, so you got that in the bag, right? Who's promising that to you? Hashem. Who's Hashem? The same one that anointed you, who gave you this mandate to do all of these killings for Hashem. You keep talking about being zealous for Hashem. So Hashem has guaranteed you four generations. So the least you could do, right, even if you are going to be cunning and you're going to be all that, you could say, listen, let Klal Yisrael, I'll get rid of these calves. Klal Yisrael will go back to Yerushalayim. And note to self, three generations from now, you know, leave a note to your great-grandchild, by the way, put these calves back in, get the Jews out of Yerushalayim. Don't, you know, the fact he was, we're going to see that he was promised that he would be king, yeah, and his children would be king. So there's nothing to worry about. But when you're a king, apparently the power, and again, he hasn't been king for that long, but it has an effect. And Rashi says he had that worry. Now, the crazy thing is that who is he worried? He just assassinated the king of Malchus Yehuda. And we're about to see, we won't see it tonight, we'll see it next in the next parak. Malchus Yehuda was not in a good place right now. It's another 7 years before Malchus Yehuda is even close to being on normal, you know, kind of stable footing. So who exactly is going to, we're going to see that there's going to be the first time in history that there's a queen in Malchus Yehuda leading without a king because she assassinated her own grandchildren who could have sat on the throne. And so you basically have what we would probably call a crazy woman leading the country. So wait a second. So you, Yehu, you're going to be this powerful king in the north, and this guy who has a farm in the Galil is going to go to Yerushalayim for Pesach, and he's going to want to sign up with the crazy queen? It doesn't make sense to you and I. We'll get there. Chapter 11. We'll get there in the next.
No,
we didn't mention it yet. I'm saying, but what you have to say is that he was not strong enough to risk his own honor, and that's telling. And he's held accountable for it. Pasuk Lamed. Vayomer Hashem el Yehu. Hashem says to Yehu, Ya'an asher hetivosa la'asos hayasher be'enai. Because of the good that you did, because of that which you did, which was yasher in my eyes, so anyone who was questionable of his behavior, Hashem calls that behavior yasher in the eyes of Hashem. Kechol asher bilvavi, following everything that was in my, Hashem's heart. Asitel beis achav, that you did to the household of Achav. Bnei revi'im, Yesh v'lecha al kisei Yisrael. The fourth generation, four generations of your descendants will sit on the throne, which is a big bracha. In Malchus Yisrael, it's a big bracha. Most kings did not get that. Yeravam did not get that. Baasha did not get that. Omri, in some ways, didn't even get four generations. He had four kings, but not generations, because it was Omri, Achav, and two of Achav's sons. That's technically only, it's four kings, but it's only three generations. And if you match up, if you work with the years, the longest monarchy was the monarchy of Yehu. Now, obviously, it doesn't compare to Malchus Beis David, but the idea being is that he was given a great bracha. And the Mefarshim point out that the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu works is that if you do something good, you're rewarded for that good, even if you do something bad, which you will then be punished for that bad. It's not that the bad that you do cancels out the good that you did. That Hashem has a cheshbon, Hashem has an accounting, and for the good that you do, you get rewarded, and for the bad that you do, you get punished. And how that works is beyond human comprehension. Right? So the Gemara explains ideas. Sometimes people, you know, they're rewarded in this world so that they'll only be punished in the next world. They're punished in this world so that they'll only be rewarded in the next world. But we see that Yehu, Hashem speaks to Yehu and sends the message to Yehu that, right, that Vayomer Hashem al Yehu, probably not necessarily, it's most probably through the Navi, that Yehu, you are being rewarded because you listened to everything that I told you to listen to. The fact that he didn't remove those Egle Hazav, he's going to be held responsible for that. That's Pasuk Lamed Aleph. The Yehu lo shamar lo leches b'toras Hashem Elokei Yisrael b'chol levavo. Yehu was not careful to go in the ways in the Torah of Hashem, the laws of Hashem, the God of Israel, b'chol levavo, with all of his heart. Which makes it sound like he must have did it somewhat, but it's not full. Lo sar me'al chatos Yeravam asher hechti Yisrael. He didn't remove the sins of Yeravam who caused Klal Yisrael to sin. It's interesting that it uses the word sar to remove, because that's actually what he should have done. He should have actually removed those Egle Hazav, physically removed them. And there were soldiers who used to stand on the road and make sure that no one would go to Yerushalayim. He should have removed all of that, but he didn't. And therefore, he was punished for that. And the punishment, Pasuk Lamed Beis, Bayamim Mahim, it was in those days. In those days means during the time period of the monarchy of Yehu. Not exactly sure when, we don't chronicle most of Yehu's time. He's king for 28 years. We only really know what happens during the establishment of his monarchy. But it's Bayam Mahim, it's during his days and continuing through his dynasty, which lasts for about 101 years. Heichel Hashem lekatzot b'Yisrael. Hashem begins to cut Israel. Begins to cut away pieces of Israel that will no longer be under the control of the northern kingdom.
Who are the enemies?
Vayakim Chazal b'chol gvul Yisrael. And constantly there was battle. Chazal was the new king of Aram. Elisha had gone to Aram to anoint Chazal as king, as was prophesied to Eliyahu. The same time that Eliyahu was given three missions. You're going to anoint Chazal as the king of Aram, Yehu as the king of Malchus Yisrael, and Elisha as your successor. We saw that the only thing he did was have Elisha become his successor, and he gave the mission over to Elisha that he should go ahead and anoint the king. Elisha actually anointed Chazal. He went to Damascus and anointed Chazal, and he had his attendant, he had Yonah, go and anoint Yehu. So throughout the time period of Yehu being king, Chazal was a constant attacker. And the word is lakatzot. Lakatzot means to cut. Rashi has a different phrase from 2 weeks ago, Parsha. Right? Rivka says to Yitzchak, katzti b'chayai. I am disgusted with my life if my son Yaakov marries from the Bnei Ches. I want my son Yaakov to go back to Haran, to go marry my family, to go, my brother Lavan has two daughters. I want him to go there. Katzti b'chayai, katz, in the Lashon, disgusted. So the other way to read this pasuk is not just that Hashem, took away pieces of Israel, but he was disgusted. It began. Heichel Hashem lekatzos. And what does it mean that he began? Because like I presented it before, this was the best option for Malchus Yisrael to turn around. And it's almost as if it wasn't going to happen with Yehu, it wasn't going to happen with anyone. And it didn't happen with Yehu, and unfortunately, it didn't happen with anyone. The northern kingdom is exiled eventually. And it's more than 130 years before the first Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. The northern kingdom is utterly destroyed and virtually lost forever, in a sense. We don't, you know, the 10 lost tribes come from that time. And so, when Mashiach comes, we'll let him decide what happens. Lakatzos b'Yisrael, though, it could be the beginning of being disgusted that Hashem realized that if it's not going to be with Yehu, it's not going to come from anywhere. And the part of which lands started being affected. So Pasuk Lamed Gimel tells us, Minayardain Mizrach Hashemesh, from the Jordan towards the rising sun, Eskol Eretz HaGilad, Hagadi, Ruveni, Amenashi, those were the tribes that were on the Transjordan, so that it makes sense that they kind of went first. Me'aro'er, Adnachal Arnon, Va'agilad, Va'abashan, also references to lands that were in the Transjordan. And then those were the first lands to be removed from being under the control. It's at some point under the monarchy, or/slash the dynasty of Yehu, this began. And so as Yehu became king, if you would, and I don't know if anyone's ever done this, if it's possible, whatever the map was of the northern kingdom, what land was under the control of the king at the beginning of Yehu's reign, and what land was still under the control 101 years later when his great great grandson is no longer king, it was a much smaller piece of land. Pasuk Lamed Daled, we'll just finish the perek. The Yeser Divrei Yehu, the other aspects of Yehu's kingdom, V'chol Asher Asa, V'chol Gvurasa, everything that he did, all of his strengths, basically his entire time being king. Halohim Kesuvim, they're written, Al Sefer Divrei Hayamim L'Malchi Yisrael, in this book that we no longer have access to, called the Divrei Hayamim, the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. Vayishkav Yehu Mavosav, Yehu lied with his fathers, it means he died. Vayikbar Oso B'Shomron, they buried him in the capital city of Shomron. Vayimloch Yehoachaz Beno Tachtav, his son Yehoachaz takes over for him. Last Pasuk, Lamed Vav, Vayamim Asher Malach Yehu Al Yisrael, Esrim Ushmon Ashana B'Shomron. And Yehu ruled over Klal Yisrael in Shomron, the capital city, for 28 years. Again, just based on the number, it's quite a testament to Yehu. He was blessed with the second longest monarchy. And again, we kind of close Yehu, that he was this complex character. He had a lot going for him. He could have done more. He did not live up to his potential. And he was punished. He and his dynasty were punished. But he was blessed. Hashem doesn't take away his blessing. The blessing was you're going to have a monarchy for four generations because of the good that he did. The eradicating of the household of Achav was a success. It was what Hashem wanted. And Bez Hashem, next time we'll continue. We're going to flip it back to what was going on in Malchus Yehuda. Because again, Malchus Yehuda has a vacuum of power because their king was also assassinated.